Christian Brischke.
Robbie Suave.
You're going to laugh.
I get, oh no, am I?
When
I
you
laughed,
find out.
I haven't laughed at any of these yet. So.
I just keep getting you in the darndest little pickle.
What's happened here?
So you might remember a couple years ago, you were ill. You had some food poisoning. You ate too many old hot dogs.
Sure.
Yeah, you ate too many old hot dogs. I, out of deep personal concern for you, my friend, I got in touch with a doctor friend of mine, Dr. J, and I sent an email to Dr. J.
Bhattacharya?
No, actually, his name is Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, well, yeah.
This is a different guy. Jasmine Crockett made this mistake on the House floor, you know, ranting about how all of her Republican opponents are taking money from Jeffrey Epstein. It's a different Jeffrey Epstein. Oh. There's a high-profile Republican donor in the state of New York who's a doctor, Dr. Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, dear.
But they have similar emails. Mm. So I accidentally sent an email to the bad Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
On your behalf about these hot dogs.
Yeah.
And I wrote, you know, what advice do you have for my friend Christian Brischke? He swears he didn't know how old they were. And he feels just sick about it. And now that email, it's out there because of this Epstein's files release.
And it makes you look terrible.
I think it makes you look terrible.
Yeah.
If you don't know the full story.
Yeah. You know, I thought the examination that I went through with a Dr. Epstein was bad enough for that. So I was already mad at you about that.
Yeah.
I don't understand why a hot dog, you know, stomach illness leads to a colonoscopy. But,
well, when you're with my friends, who knows what's going to happen?
Knows? Yeah, that's
you
true.
Get poked and prodded in all sorts of places. But yeah, so here we are. Epstein files. Every got. What they fucking wanted all along. Yeah. Of course, no one's satisfied, even though 3 million pages of documents were released on Friday.
We need more. My hunger for Epstein files is like my lust for hot dogs. I need to consume more.
Yeah.
I don't care how old they are.
Good. Now,
bleep that.
Cody, our wonderful director producer. Showed me this cool database that I think DropSite created, where it looks like you're opening Jeffrey Epstein's.
Oh yeah, it's like a Gmail clone.
The actual emails. Mm-hmm. Look, I have a lot to say about this. Mm-hmm. If people watching this have been paying attention to me on social media this week, they know I have some scorching hot takes on the Epstein files. I'm gradually being radicalized into Michael Tracyism.
That he did nothing wrong.
You know, you don't want to go full Michael Tracy.
No, that would be lamentable.
But I'm somewhere in the middle, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. I'll explain that in greater detail.
Did you want to catch people up on the scandal real quick? Jeffrey Epstein, New York financier,
with his people keep saying things that are not true. Mysterious source of wealth. It's not that mysterious. He was a hedge fund manager for a couple of very rich people. How did he get such a lenient sentence? Well, the evidence against him was actually not as compelling as it seems to us now, because many of the people did not want to testify against him. Ooh. And so that's what prosecutors do, because this wasn't political when it happened in 2008. When he gets accused of sex crimes with underage women and he's convicted. He works out an agreement and he goes to prison. He's like
it wasn't a political flashpoint like as it is now, where it's like consumed all our politics.
Right.
But I mean, very arguably, it was political in that he got a pretty sweetheart deal from doing some underage sex crimes.
Right.
Right. Like if this was someone who had, you know, files of child pornography on his computer, he'd have been in jail for and not super well connected and wealthy. He probably would have gone to prison for a very long time, as opposed to
But the distinction between those two things is meaningful, because the victims did not want to cooperate at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they took the position that they were not sexually assaulted. Now, some of them, not all of them. Virginia Giuffre was not underage.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one who said it was assault, but she also made a number of accusations against other people, some of which she subsequently withdrew.
Mm.
So I don't know what you do with that. Others who were underage, said they were not assaulted. Now they were underage, so it doesn't matter if they say they were not.
Right.
But they didn't want to offer evidence against him, mm-hmm. and that was why.
I see.
Now, subsequently, years later, when trial attorneys attached themselves to them and said, you know, if you reinterpret this thing that happened to you years ago as a kind of trauma, and you were still in the midst of it, and you were afraid of him, and that's it, why you didn't want to say anything, and you do that now, also with his friends, you're going to get millions of dollars. I'm going to get half of it. They all did that. So those are the people standing behind Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie, whom I adore in most other contexts, saying, give us the answers.
Yeah, I mean—
That didn't make you a little skeptical?
Sure. I mean, obviously, any high-profile alleged sex criminal,
right.
Is going to attract subsequent right. allegations, some of which might, you right. know, there's can be a grifter element to it, obviously. There could be a financial incentive. But, I mean, this stuff came to light, again, not because of trial attorneys and civil litigation, but because of, what's her name, Julia Brown, mm-hmm. the Miami Herald reporter,
yeah.
who, working through the past files of Epstein, managed to connect with victims who
yeah.
were anonymous at the time, and she just did dogged reporting. And started to uncover more stuff, and what made this DOJ initial deal that he got in 2008 yeah. a lot more scandalous, right?
I'm just getting started in my revisionism.
Oh
here.
Boy, okay.
We got more. So Epstein is himself a sexual predator and a monster and a villain, and so it's not about revisionism with respect to him or with Brunel is the other guy who he committed suicide to as a result of this. He's guilty. Ghislaine Maxwell's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people who did it, but. But I see, like, how people discuss the Epstein files, and they're like, we got to figure out who he was trafficking the children to.
Okay, sure, yeah.
He mm-hmm. is the one who was doing sexual
right.
Misconduct with underage women.
Yeah.
The idea that he was procuring children for rich people to rape.
Yeah.
Is an idea that finds no support in any of these documents that have been released. And I think that's notable because I keep being told this is a global pedophile cabal that, and if you're MAGA, mm-hmm. involves Democrats at the elite level.
Those
and
guys,
if you're Democrats now, yeah. so if this started with MAGA saying this is, we're going to prove the Clintons
yeah.
banged children.
Yeah.
And that's what Kash Patel and all Dan Bongino and all those people promised them. Then they start looking and they go, oh yeah, there's nothing in here.
Back to podcasting.
Then Democrats said, well, wait a minute, Trump knew this guy too.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So then this has become a Democratic feeding frenzy. And now it's mostly liberal people. I see, like, oh my God, another email. Look at this. Look at who's in the Epstein files. Another Republican, another.
That
is utterly meaningless.
The partisan shift on this issue was really remarkable to see happen.
Yes.
When, like, immediately when Trump gets into the office, all of a sudden Democrats are like, oh, this thing that we didn't care about for the last 4 years that Biden was in office, that was this, like, right-wing podcaster war cause celeb.
Yes.
Now, it could be us.
It could be our turn.
Those, yeah, so just, like, completely flipped.
And,
so,
and similarly,
a lot of
they have uncovered zero evidence whatsoever to link Trump or other Republican figures to any of this. The people who are most justifiably humiliated and embarrassed and should be, we should think less of as a result of this are people.
Jeffrey Epstein.
yeah, we already knew that one. Are people who continued to associate with him,
yeah.
in my view, after the initial conviction, long into the twilight of his relevancy. That includes Noam Chomsky, who sent emails to him explaining to him how he thought he could beat the charges.
Yeah.
Stacey Plaskett, the delegate to the Virgin Islands, who was seeking his political favor very late. Mm-hmm. Bannon is the most implicated in all these things of all. Steve Bannon.
Such an irony.
What a scumbag.
Yeah.
Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Really gross accusations about him. Now, it's an email Epstein sent to himself, so it's not, like, corroborated by Bill Gates. Bill Gates
yeah.
denies sex with a prostitute, STI, gross. I hate Bill Gates anyway. I don't want any,
because
you know,
of the vaccine?
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wants to, you know, stick us all with needles all the time and don't care for him.
Yeah.
So those people, bad.
Mm-hmm.
Very bad. You can change your judgment of them. You still don't see evidence of them as part of a cabal of
okay.
pedophiles.
Let me
right.
So, okay, let me partially agree with you.
Am I going insane for caring about that? That, like, the salacious allegation everyone was screaming about has no evidence whatsoever for it? Okay, go ahead. I'll stop ranting. I'll let you talk now.
You're not going more insane. so let me mostly agree with you and then offer just a smidge of pushback. If
How
I
dare you? Go fuck yourself.
Damn it. Okay. This is it. This is our last podcast. Yeah. No. Okay.
This is the Epstein episode. Yeah, we so knew it would end in fire and ice.
Okay, so the most lurid and coherent version of the Epstein scandal, which is that he was running some sort of pedophilia blackmail ring in the service of the Israeli government often, right? It's like he's a Mossad agent who invites powerful people, politicians, to his island where he films them doing illegal sex acts and then blackmails them into doing his paymaster Israel's bidding. Right?
That's what I was promised.
And that's not, there's nothing to indicate that whatsoever in this. And there's no Epstein client list of all the rich people he trafficked women to. There's nothing like that. There's nothing that shows some sort of like trafficking conspiracy. But what there is a lot of is people talking very openly about how he's having parties with his girls and whatever else, and how that's an appeal of being around him. And that's part of his social circle and business circles and his business associates. Like, what was the one email from him? It was a Saudi Arabian or UAE official, or it's like, I'm looking forward to the pussiness at your party.
they knew what he was about.
And they were happy to be in that element and participate in it. And it's not evidence of some giant sex trafficking conspiracy, but it's not crazy to think that a man who was having, you know, had hundreds of people, you know, paying for hundreds of, you know, dirty massages, including potentially with dozens of underage women, would have underage women at these parties that he's very openly inviting people to. And people are very openly interested in kind of the lurid aspects of going and partying on his island. And, you know, I listened to, I always forget if it's Julia Brown or Julie Brown, the Miami Herald reporter, but I listened to her on Ross Douthat's podcast a few months ago. And she talks about how, like, she doesn't believe, like, the Epstein client list or, like, explicit trafficking arrangements either. It was just more of, like, it was a favor he could provide, right, by inviting people into this world. And then he didn't really need to explicitly blackmail people. It was just, like, this kind of implication of, like, I know what you did. Let's do business, right? I don't think anything, again, there's no explicit proof of blackmail and arrangements like this.
I mean, there is, but
it wouldn't be crazy to assume that that was part of his.
Well, right. And there MO, is, right? I mean, the Bill Gates thing, like he wrote that email to himself because
he was planning on blackmailing Bill Gates.
Bill Gates was pulling out of some deal. Bill Gates should have pulled out. And he wanted to keep this little piece of information handy.
Yeah.
So yes, but. So that's true in that case. There's not more of the thing they alleged, which was, he was a arranger of sexual encounters with children.
Yes. Yeah, again, like I say, the most lurid aspects of his depravity haven't been borne out, and then also the most coherent version of his conspiracies hasn't been borne out either. Yes. There's been a lot of good commentary from Matthew Petty at Reason, as well as just some other writings from people who's like, Jeffrey Epstein, he's a fixer for a semi-criminal global elite, right? People who are trying, you know, former intelligence officers in the Soviet Union who are trying to loot Russia or Kazakhstan and have a bunch of money that they want to get out of the country and not get taxed, or people who want to invest and make a buck selling security systems to the Mongolian government or whatever else. Like, Jeffrey Epstein is in the middle of these kinds of webs, right? He's a shady businessman who also had a lot of sexual proclivities. And that his, I mean, the emails in a sense are interesting because they do show you a lot of this kind of seamy world, like the underbelly of like global finance, right? It doesn't require that Epstein be a disgusting pervert to make all this stuff work, right? He just happened to be as well.
Yes.
But it's not like those two things are fused into a giant conspiracy that explains all our politics, right?
Yes. But people are not processing this on the level of nuance you just got into whatsoever, as far as I can tell. Because it turns out that releasing millions of pages of documents of not just these emails, which I agree these emails are notable and in the public interest to release. And that's why I supported doing this whole release. But I guess I didn't think through. I rarely change my mind about something or admit I was wrong. But
are you? No, you're not going to.
Well, I mean, the vote, the Epstein Transparency Act vote was, you know, 300-1 or whatever it was. One person voted against it, Representative Clay Higgins.
Yeah.
Not a Republican I particularly agree with. In fact, I looked the one time I've written about him, it was disagreeing with something he said
he's kind of out of control.
Banning all anti-Charlie Kirk speech or whatever.
Yeah,
he voted against it and he said, yeah, I support, you know, getting more information out there to the public, absolutely, but we don't just release investigative records like the notes that investigators are taking that contain completely uncorroborated accusations from crazy people.
Yeah.
If we do that, we're just going to damage a lot of completely innocent people's reputations.
Yeah, sure.
That's what he said.
And that's what's happened.
And that's exactly what has happened.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like the feeding frenzy. And again, it's now Democratic driven. Axes being grinded against people they don't like, including, of course, J.K. Rowling. I saw that the other day. They're like, you know, the headline is J.K. Rowling denies Jeffrey Epstein was at the premiere for the Harry Potter musical or whatever.
What?
And actually, the files do demonstrate that he tried to get in and he got turned away at the door. But like, what does it matter if he was there?
Yeah.
That then they would have gone, see, this proves J.K. Rowling is a part of the global pedophile cabal.
Yeah.
And that's just because liberals don't like her anymore.
They turned away Jeffrey Epstein at the Harry Potter musical premiere. Damn, that's a new low.
Yeah.
I would throw an invisibility cloak over me and not come out if that happened to me.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, it is true. It's ridiculous. Like, I mean, there's
kind of Epstein files means nothing.
It means literally nothing.
The staff at Reason is in it because we wrote articles that are in the bibliography for reports, just like news articles.
Right.
So in the Epstein files is a meaningless distinction.
It truly is.
It's half the
planet.
It truly
is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why this idea of like, you remember that from the very beginning of the second Trump administration when they had all those right-wing influencers like hold up the big binders of the Epstein files,
yeah,
right?
Those people are retarded.
They're complete idiots.
Can I say that?
Yeah. Say it again.
I still feel kind of bad. It's getting overused now. It's back and people are making too much use of it.
It's kind of
that's
like
my take.
It's kind of like when politicians swear or use the F word in public.
Yeah.
It's like, I want this thing to be transgressive but not a slur. So it's like you can say it and have a little bit of spice without it being something just like part of normal polite discourse.
Absolutely. It shows you mean business if you use it sparingly.
Right. But now it's becoming overused. That's, and so it's just like kind everything. Of like gauche and watered down.
Yeah.
Totally. Absolutely.
It's funny when I say it. It's not automatically funny when other people do it.
I have a few extra comments on the R word if we can if we can circle back to this.
Yes.
Yeah. Because this would be a great place to air them. they were like, these people these podcasters who had the Epstein files, they're complete idiots. They're not reporters. They don't know how to do investigations or anything like that. They don't know what a big trove of documents contains or what it's about. The huge Epstein file dump, no one quite understands what it is and all these things that it contains. And you're right, it is, it has resulted in a release of a lot of information from people who have done nothing wrong or anything like that. It's why this, like, sometimes the DOJ will do this. They did this in the Biden documents case. They do it occasionally where it's like, we have investigated this person and we think they're guilty, but we're not going to charge them for X, Y, or Z reasons, right? That's really unfair to the person who, like in the Joe Biden, you know, had classified documents case. It was like, because his memory is so bad that we think we can't, like, it would just be like a disgrace to put him on trial, or it would be unproductive to put him on trial.
Right. And the Democrats like, no, that's not true. His mind's sharper than ever.
Which is of course ridiculous, but it's also unfair. You know, I don't want to, I'm trying to defend Joe Biden, but like, it's unfair for Joe Biden. Cause it's like the government has said you're guilty of a crime, but we're just not going to try and prove it in court. And it's like, okay, well, where do I go to get vindicated? Right. Like I don't have a chance to prove my innocence.
Yes.
Right. Which, I mean, you don't have to prove your innocence, but it's bullshit for the government to say you're guilty or imply you're guilty. and then not, you know, follow up with it. And similarly, when the government investigates a crime, they accumulate a lot of accusations that turn out not to be true. They accumulate a lot of information on innocent people. And this is why you don't release stuff like a lot of this stuff pro forma, is because then it can, you know, bring scandal to someone who's committed no crime and who shouldn't have had their privacy violated, but did as a result of investigation.
Did we all just forget there's such a thing as false accusations? There's such a thing as crazy people? Like, there are a bunch of Trump accusations in these files, but they were all filed in just before the 2020 election by crazy partisans that they're not true. Anyone can do that.
Right, yeah. Anyone can make up lies.
And now it's just being blasted out there. I'm surprised that Democrats who've made the spread of misinformation such a central fear of theirs
are now
just wildly in favor of this.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised to some extent that conservatives who learned from the excesses of the Me Too era and the excesses of cancel culture that just believing everything and acting accordingly is not a sound way to form judgments.
Yeah.
Got so over their skis about this for a while.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, like, in this, like, populist moment that, like, the populists, like, can't help themselves. Like, you have enough scandal and dirt of Epstein being a shady businessman, but it has to be so much more. It has to mean that the president, whether Clinton or Trump, was participating in the child rape, and then now we just have to take that as a matter of course and then argue about whether that's true or not, and it's not, instead of just, like, look at this web, you know, like if you're a left, like I'm not a communist, but if you're a communist, like you should be like, look at this web of finance stretching from Israel to the United States. And
that's what they're doing. Yes.
That's interesting.
Right. And when you push back on this, I have tons of people screaming at me on social media, not to complain I'm being criticized on social media. It's fine. But like, oh, this proves you're pro-Israel after all, that I don't accept this bullshit.
Well, it's funny. Matthew Petty mentions this in his piece too, where it's like
Matthew Petty, who is not pro-Israel,
not pro-Israel at all, not at all.
I would accuse him of that.
I would not describe him as a friend of Israel, not a friend of the IDF. But he mentions in his piece, like, you know, who's really happy with the Epstein file releases? Benjamin Netanyahu, because his political rival.
He was retweeting Ryan Grimm.
Yeah. Right.
Oh,
that horseshoe just keeps on spinning, or whatever horseshoes do. But it's controversial in Israel because the Epstein's big friend in Israel was the the center left rival of Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Yeah. Politics. I mean, this is why we're libertarians, right? Because like the world is not some delicately orchestrated machine where a man behind the curtain is pulling all the levers. Like life is. Human society, it's spontaneous and it's messy and it's complicated.
Yes.
And there's lots of little interesting plots and stories out there. There's lots of different shady characters.
This is what
it's not all part of some giant grand narrative orchestrated
by. No one is doing this on purpose.
Yeah, right.
It's just happening. It's just and I get bothered.
The only thing that is coherent and logical is the market that bubbles up from all of this.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the market, when you leave it and no central entity directing its productivity, no one saying we need more lumber, we need less brick, just let prices decide these things and you get human prosperity and flourishing. Mm-hmm. When you try to control it and try to put some little committee in charge of deciding how it goes, then you get a cabal of pedophiles.
Yep. Or at least unfounded accusations about how the cabal of pedophiles
is running
around.
This is another, we can move on after this, but another thing that's bothering me, you stick those black boxes over people's faces, it just makes the people look guilty regardless of the content. I mean, there was a guy, a photo of a guy that I mentioned, and this guy, whatever, he might be a shitty guy. He was like friends with Epstein for sure. His wife was friends with Epstein. I'm not making any excuses for him or saying he didn't do anything wrong, but he's pictured with these kids. You don't even know that this is the Epstein Island. Maybe it's the Epstein Island. And, you know, he's got his arms around the kids and everyone's like, oh my God, here are some of the kids. It's his kids.
Yeah.
It's his kids.
Yeah.
So
there
was a photo of some old guy looked like they were torturing or tickling some. It's not Epstein. It's not from the files. It's just on social media.
Huh. Old man being tickled.
I think he's doing the tickling. I don't know. It's not Epstein.
Okay, it's not Epstein.
So who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I'm just, it's giving moral panic.
Yeah.
It's giving witch hunt a little bit. It's it's reminding me of my glory days. Mm. Scrutinizing on college campuses the idea that 1 in 4 women were going to be assaulted, that there were serial predators everywhere. Remember, this was framed as the hunting ground, beasts hunting women, culminating, obviously, in the Rolling Stone story that was then shown to be completely false. And that idea was knocked down by me and other people. Mm-hmm. I'm having a lot of flashbacks to that period, especially because people screaming at me that I must be a pedophile to think this way is the same as, well, you must be a rapist if you think that there should be due process for people accused of shady and unclear encounters on college campuses.
Yeah, it is interesting where it's like the, so there was, I guess if I could divide these eras here, it's like there was the initial kind of campus, sexual assault scare. I mean, obviously sexual assault happens, but you know, there was some very crazy ideas being thrown around at the time about what constitutes sexual assault, the prevalence of it, all these kinds of things.
There were attempts to redefine it.
Yeah, into lots of different behavior. Yeah. Yes. And then, you know, obviously the
there was an attempt to redefine it into a first mover advantage. in an unclear encounter, you should be the first one to accuse.
Just like, as a prophylactic, right?
Yeah, because then you're the accuser and the other person is the respondent.
Thank you, Obama. The witch trials they set up.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, that was like for the mass. That was for the people to argue about. And then we moved on to Me Too, which is like a little bit more elite, right? It was, so like there was Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby. So it was like a little bit more like
Matt
these people.
Lauer.
These people in the like the rich and among the rich and famous, but then
media
that kind of
entertainment leaders.
But then that trickled down to just like workplace environments and like subsequent allegations within media and larger corporations.
Yeah.
But then that kind of
petered
out as well,
pack.
Right? But now we've gone full elite, right? Now it's like the only sexual assault we care about is the ones committed by the ultimate billionaire behind it all, right?
Right.
Or the president, or who, you know, if depending on if you're on the left or right of the scandal,
right.
So it's weird that it's like, it's like the fervor and the, I don't know, the spirit of the witch hunt is still there, but it's being focused more and more on a narrow set of people.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, people are getting more and more rabid about this particular thing. That's how I see it.
Yeah. But,
Strange times we live in.
Strange times. Well, we'll see if, but you know, people are still calling for, they want the
more
really
files.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get the stuff. If you're a Democrat, there's not the Trump stuff. We didn't get it. If you're MAGA faithful, maybe you're like, well, the Clintons, Comer wants to bring the Clintons in to testify. I'm like,
great.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton never even met him.
Yeah.
No one dislikes and finds disgusting the Clintons more than I did. But even I'm like,
Come on.
Just leave them alone.
Yeah,
I mean, and Bill Clinton, I absolutely, by the way, believe is guilty of rape of Juanita Broderick. I 1,000% believe that he just straight up sexually, not a pressured to do so, but like held her down and raped her.
Yeah,
it is an appalling monster who never faced any accountability for that. Mm-hmm. So. Not soft on the real stuff.
Yeah.
Just,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
Clarifying.
Yeah.
This is a fun episode we're having.
Yeah, sure. Okay, wait. So we're moving on. We're done with that.
Yeah. Okay. The R word.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So here's retarded. I'll say
it. Yeah. Okay.
It's not a nice word, but it's a word that I will occasionally use.
Yes.
It packs a certain punch.
The structure of the word is pleasing.
It's got those hard sounds in it, right? And it's useful for describing someone being stupid, right? So I don't want it. It was bad when we couldn't say it at all.
Yes.
I didn't like that. It's being way overused now. And in a way that's a little unbecoming for people and like, professionals on X. If you're a doctor or a geneticist or whatever, or a politician, you shouldn't be saying, retarded in public or in your tweets or things like that. You shouldn't say it. But I would like to preserve it in the same way I would like to preserve the ability to say fuck or something like that. As a useful expletive.
Right.
There's this thing that happens with retarded or similar slurs, right? I don't even think it's right to call them slurs, but like we want a word to mean extra stupid.
Right.
Right? But then we keep, for whatever weird reason, deciding that the word that we've settled on for extra stupid is offensive. And so then we have to make up a new word, right? So it's like you used to say imbecile or moron or idiot or dumb,
right?
Like these were all words that described physical disabilities, or in the case of like imbecile or moron, right, like weird eugenics categories of like
right,
lower races of right, people. But they were all doing the exact same thing that retard did, and why mm-hmm, retard was supposedly offensive is that like you're ascribing to a person who has a normally functioning brain some sort of like physical, you know, mental deformity, mm-hmm, right? And that's wrong. So we can't use that word anymore. Let's invent a new word that does the exact same thing, right? Because after we couldn't say retard, people tried. They started retailing smooth brain. Do you remember that?
Oh.
It didn't get too popular, but it was like a lot of lefties
yes,
would use it.
Yes.
And it's like this is just doing the exact same thing because that is like a form of mental retardation, as if like you have like the folds in your brain are a little smooth, right? We just keep moving on.
This concept,
it's different. See, when you make this case, I'm sorry, I feel very passionate about
no,
this.
No, no. This is your own Epstein files.
Our producer Cody is nodding along with his, you know,
yeah,
dead vacant eyes. No, when you make this case, a lot of people will bring up racial slurs and be like, "Oh, so you would have argued against, you know, saying, you know, making it bad to say the N word yeah, or anything else," and that is totally unfair because we've completely decided racial slurs are bad,
off
and
limits.
There's no attempt to like recreate racial right, slurs that we then think are okay.
Right.
It's like this is a category of speech that we don't use in any circumstance. I agree with that. That's a good development in society. We're not willing to give up a word that means you're extra stupid that connects it to some sort of physical deformity.
Yeah.
And so if we're not, let's just stop the yeah, games. Let's settle on
stop
this word. Let's use it sparingly and let's be done with it.
This concept you're describing, you know, it has a name. It's the euphemism treadmill. Steven Pinker actually has commented on the exact thing you just described,
wow,
the euphemism treadmill.
I came up with it independently. I wanted to be known. Yeah, I didn't even go to fucking Harvard or wherever
wherever retards go. No, see, it's fun sometimes.
Yeah.
But you got to ease off the gas,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yeah. As the new woke Cookie Monster says, you know, cookies are sometimes food. That's how I feel about the word retard.
Catherine doesn't like it.
No,
so
she
we
doesn't,
don't like
she
to
doesn't,
say it in the office.
But
I appreciate that. I agree. Because
mm-hmm,
that keeps us to an acceptable minimum.
Yes, absolutely.
There should be a stigma.
One person in the room should be like,
yes.
Right? Two people laugh, one person, that keeps a right, proper
right,
equilibrium,
right,
proper tension. I think this is a little bit of a generational divide too, right?
And a gender divide.
In what way?
A little bit.
No.
On days
right,
when
yeah,
the office is just mm, you and me and Jack and, you know, the ladies are elsewhere, you know, there's going to be more of this sort of salty sea dog language.
Yeah, a little body banter.
Yeah, a little.
Some Charles II-esque ribald.
God, we love him. We see a previous episode where didn't we talk in extended length about how much we love Charles
II? Yeah, that was last episode, I believe.
I think it was 2 weeks ago.
Was it? I mean, he's just always on my mind.
Smooth
yeah,
brain. can't pay attention to what
at least
time
when I have syphilis, like Charles yeah, II. Yeah.
Well, we can cure that today, so it's not even. And Bill Gates might want to look into that.
There's did you ever read the you ever read any Neal Stephenson?
I read no, not that much.
Many of his books are great. I think we have a couple on the shelf yeah, back here. He also has the Baroque trilogy about like Charles II times.
Yeah.
But there's a scene in there where like they've accumulated like Isaac Newton and all these other you know, like not Renaissance era, but like that era, you know.
Oh, Snow Crash. I read Snow Crash.
Okay, yeah, obviously. Snow Crash. That's libertarian
yeah,
canonics. But there's one scene where they have like all the greatest scientific minds of their time, like organized at the Royal College, and then one of the monarchs shows up and is like, "Hey, just by the way, could you guys look into a cure for syphilis?"
That's amazing. I wanted to talk about DoorDash culture.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Because that was a big topic of social media discussion mm-hmm, this week. Now, I think the idea that the reason Gen Z is so impoverished or is having difficulty, you know, affording the American dream because they keep door dashing everything is not true in the same way it was not true that they kept buying avocado toast or whatever.
Yeah.
But people do order stuff a lot in DoorDash.
Yeah.
Do you order DoorDash a lot?
I don't think I've ever done it sober. I mean, seriously, like this is
yeah,
the only time that I do.
Yeah.
Like I will either cook all my own meals or
yeah,
I'm, you know, more occasionally we'll go to a restaurant or something
yeah,
like that. Right.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
I may have truly never just DoorDash something like on my own. If I had a group of people over, if we're playing D&D at my house, we might DoorDash some Chinese food or pizza or something. That is the only circumstance I will do it.
If I if I stumble home at 1 a.m. and I'm wasted, maybe I will regretfully order some pizza or whatever else, right? I don't make it a routine thing.
It's not a good idea. The food quality is not that. The food quality is great when you're drunk.
Yeah.
You want something also unusual, but it's expensive and it's not that good.
It's expensive and it's not that good. There's only a few things that work for delivery, and basically all of them you were already had delivery models pre-DoorDash, right? Pizza.
Yes.
Excellent delivery food.
Yes.
The only good food for feeding a group of people, right? At something that isn't like a sit down dinner party, right?
Yeah.
Some people use Chinese. That's okay. But I think pizza is superior.
Yeah.
Chinese delivery culture, right? Yes. That already existed.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe the one innovation you could say that has gotten a little better is you didn't order delivery burritos beforehand, mm-hmm. right? But that actually does work as a delivery food, right?
Yeah, sure.
But everything else is just, it's bad and it costs too much and you shouldn't be doing it.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love pizza. I'm perfectly happy with just frozen pizza. I keep a couple of frozen pizzas in the freezer and that's fine.
Yeah.
I'll heat that up if I'm drunk at 2 a.m. and I want pizza.
Yeah, because there's the big, what was it, New York Times, Wall Street Journal story about Gen X, Gen Z spending way too much money on DoorDash.
Gen Z.
Yeah, I always find these profiles interesting because, I mean, it's a mistake to assume that they're representative of a...
I mean, I do know people who are younger than me who order...
So do I. So do I.
It's not a totally made up idea.
No, totally. And in fact, these platforms, if capitalism were doing its job, you would imagine that it would be pushing out the curve of spending that is done, right?
Yeah.
What else? If you're making it easier to do something, which is order food to your home, more people should do it and more mm-hmm. people should be spending more money on it. So I don't disagree with the idea that more people are spending money in this way or that it is.
I look down on people who do this excessively.
Yeah, no, I find it unbecoming.
Yes.
Yeah, it's you know what I think is just really shameful behavior. I'm not a parent, so if you're a very busy person and have children and everything, maybe the situation is different. But if you order delivery groceries, go to the grocery store. What is wrong with you? Yeah.
Thank you. I could kiss you on your face right now.
We don't need the Suave files.
I agree with that so much.
Yeah.
We've
made foraging for food so unbelievably easy. You can't even take the extra 10 steps to go do it yourself.
Me and my better half have had a couple arguments about that because he would just order all the groceries. And I'm well, I kind of want
to. I like to go and look.
Browsing.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it except I want to go once a week.
Yeah.
If there's something. Like I said, wine, you can have that ordered from Costco or whatever because it's heavy. It's mm-hmm. less convenient to transport. It's always, I like the kind I like. It's always the same thing. That's fine. But for the proteins we're going to have for the week, I want to browse the steak aisle. I want to see what kinds of mm-hmm. chicken they have. I want to see what kind of fish they have this mm-hmm. week. Buy those couple things. And that's how you, I'm not a super advanced cook. I've had to get a little bit better in the last year mm-hmm. because the person I'm with likes to eat mm-hmm. food more than I do. I was happy to just have chicken nuggets every day for, 20 years.
No, I'm super utilitarian about my food consumption
but
as well.
But the secret is it does not take a lot more effort real basic to great.
Yeah.
It takes a lot more effort than to get to gourmet cook when you're cooking recipes and you have to have all these excess mm-hmm. ingredients. No, nobody's got time for that. Not going to be doing that. But you buy every week I buy chicken thighs. I've got a steak sauce. I've got a couple different steak sauces. You just marinate the chicken thighs an hour ahead of time. You can do it the day before if you really want to. You can do it mm-hmm. 10 minutes before if you mm-hmm. forgot. And then you just throw that on the grill mm-hmm. or put it in the oven with mm-hmm. some broccoli
mm-hmm.
yep. and it's ready. And if I start that process at 6, we'll be done eating at 6:45.
Yeah.
The DoorDash won't even have arrived yet.
Right, yeah.
And it's better. That's better, cheaper, and that does not take effort. No. That was three ingredients. Yeah, that was the chicken itself, the steak sauce or barbecue sauce or whatever you have. Yeah. Just have a you know a couple jugs of that.
Yeah.
And salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know why people can't be expected to do that.
If you know how to make some flesh and some vegetables in an oven, sitting pretty.
Right.
It tastes good. It's good for you. Right. Cheaper. There's it's just like, it's all wins. It's all wins.
All wins.
It's all wins.
You'll feel better after you eat it.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know what explains it. I don't know. Some people just, I don't know. They need more complex dishes, some level of impulse control.
Right. I saw people recommending when people were discussing this, you know, my old co-host Brianna Joy Gray went viral discussing this, saying that like the meals being recommended are too complicated. You know, I don't have all these
sometimes,
to make like an Asian meal. I don't have all the, you know, 10 different, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I agreed with her. Yeah. It's that's too much. That's too much. But you can just have, again, a couple different sauce flavors, and you just buy a couple different proteins, and that's all. That's just two things.
Cooking recipes need to emphasize simplicity and ease, right? It's like, so like if you're giving like for exercise and dieting, right? I think the best advice that you can give is like, don't try to like scientifically engineer what the best possible thing for a human body to do.
Mm-hmm.
So like, just do what's easy and what you like, right?
Yeah.
Focus on those.
Yeah.
Same thing with exercise, same thing with cooking, right? Yeah, a few simple ingredients, all the recipes online, they always assume you have like four extra ingredients than like what you actually have, but like, don't be intimidated. It just takes, not that much. Yeah.
Yes.
But put drizzle some olive oil on some broccoli and put it in the oven for 20 minutes or however long it's supposed to be in
and
there.
It's delicious.
Delicious. Nice delicious. And crunchy. Yeah. And it costs you like 50 cents, right?
I don't like them wandering in my apartment, leaving DoorDash food in the hallways of my apartment building.
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
Sometimes people forget to pick them up.
Yeah, it's gross.
And then the whole hallway smells like your 2 a.m. tacos or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
No, it's disgusting.
It bugs me.
Yeah. It also, it ruins the...
I kind of think they should have to go down to the front desk to get it.
Well,
if I was running my building, I would say we're not admitting people up to who are doing food delivery. Come down to the front desk and pick up your own disgusting food, you fat, lazy piece of shit. I want you to feel the shame of going down the elevator.
Yeah, I'll be the good cop and say you'd feel so much better about yourself if you went to the front desk. But no, I agree. It's there's certain things I have difficulty putting into words, but there's just certain things that really turn my stomach about, like, I guess they just call it like sweatpants culture.
Mm.
You know, like certain, when I see people taking conveniences that I find unbecoming or failing to appreciate that they are in. Like when I see, this is a sillier example, and you might disagree with me here, but like when you see someone in pajamas or particular, or like with a, even with a neck pillow on an airplane, I'm like, you were too comfortable in public.
Oh, you're one
right?
of these.
I am. I'm not a masochist. I don't, you know, I don't think people should be uncomfortable all the time, but there's a certain level of comportment, that I think is involved in, you know, how you run your affairs.
Intellectually, I want to agree with that because, you know, we both love Mad Men. I love the Mad Men era. You know, I mentioned wear, you know, nice clothes, and I don't like the people
I mean,
looking,
I don't
like,
wear
slobs.
Nice clothes, so, like,
right.
I do dress
this
like
is
a slob,
very
but,
much
yeah.
a not do as you say or do as you do.
Yeah, so part of it is I aspire to, you know, be like that as well.
I think there's a difference between, and sometimes it's not always easy to tell, but there is a difference between the kind of wearing out your pajamas culture, which I agree is bad, and but like there's a athleisure that a lot of people wear out that I myself wear out a lot, and I think is fine. And can look good.
Sure, yeah.
So that can be sweatpants-y, but it's not pajama sweatpants. It's like Lululemon sweatpants.
I'm not going to complain about yoga pants, all right?
Yeah. love to see the boys in the yoga pants.
Okay,
is that what you're, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, sure, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going through the Epstein files, being like, come on, there's got to be more of this.
Women wear at the gym these days.
Yeah, you know.
If your mother saw you like that, huh?
If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. I always tell myself, but, you know.
Then, some people, actually, this came up in this Muscle Man book that I was telling you about that I read.
Yeah, I really want to read that.
Yeah, I think you would like it. He talks about being terrified of being surreptitiously recorded at the gym staring at an attractive woman in yoga pants. Because there are videos like this where they try to...
Yeah, it'll go like viral on Instagram or whatever every once in a while.
I'm sorry, it's insane.
It's completely unfair. Yeah, it's completely unfair.
You look around at the gym. You see what other people are doing. It can be even like in a non-luring way. I want to see what other people's workouts are.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of people, they want you to be looking around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No good. Okay.
Oh, so wait, if I could just, if I could complete my thought, maybe.
Yes,
I think it's like, what connects people wearing sweatpants on the airplane to people ordering DoorDash in their apartment? There's a lack of vitality, you know? Mm. I don't want to sound like a fascist, but like, we're not made to be fast food slugs, you know? We should be out there living our lives and experiencing the world. And yes. I think both things kind of suggest that we should just
I will not
be,
eat the bug. I will not live in the
we
pod.
We shouldn't be Baron von Harkonnen's, you know, luxuriating in our slop bath, right?
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So, and I worry some aspects of our culture lend themselves to Harkonnen-like delights.
Well, speaking of fascism, Helen Andrews had some tweets this week. Who I know she's your friend. She was tweeting about
I went to their house for Easter because they're Orthodox. They always have a big Easter thing, but it was the same day as Catholic Easter this year last year it was.
Socially,
what did she do this time?
Nothing against it, but she has some scorching hot takes.
She does. She does
on social media that I typically do not agree with, and this was one of them. I don't like when people marshal their anti-immigration arguments. There's always this sleight of hand where it starts out with something, you know, some complaint of mass illegal immigration that a complaint that is fine. Okay. That's a reasonable, can we possibly absorb, you know, instantly all sorts of people from a different culture without vetting to make, you know, the compatible. Okay. Fine. In a real world, we can deal with that. The government can have, in my view, if we're having a government at all, they can do some amount of selection and looking into that. Fine, reasonable stuff. Mm-hmm. It always starts with that. Mm-hmm. But then they start doing this sleight of hand where it's like, yeah, we got to get all these, you know, because they're taking too much welfare. They're not working. They're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And we got to get all these, you know, Mexicans out. Like, okay, but they are working.
Yeah.
And those Indians got to go back. Well, they're really working.
Yeah, working really hard.
And they're doing jobs that we can't do.
Yeah.
And the South Koreans are building a factory, the Hyundai factory, and nobody else knows how to build them.
No,
and even Trump
that.
Is like, I'm sorry, we need them to build the factory. Nobody else knows how to do it. But she's like, yes, if we bring in too many of these immigrants, the Asians and Indians.
Oh, right.
That will ruin American culture and it must be stopped. They're too good.
Right.
They're too good at tests. They're doing too well for themselves. And that's why they have to be kept at bay.
They focus too much on grades, which has then corrupted the college admissions process, even if it focuses just on grades and SAT scores. That was her complaint, right?
Yeah, that sounds like holistic bullshit. In order to get in more, that's some affirmative action stuff. That's some diversity nonsense. There'd be a benefit to having, I reject all those arguments.
Yeah,
I don't care if every single person admitted to Harvard is Asian. I just don't care.
I remember her writing about the Supreme Court.
It's a
Court.
Policy failure when they're not.
Yeah. I remember the when the Supreme Court decision came down about Harvard admissions, right? She had a piece in the American Conservative, basically as a sort of pro-affirmative action piece. I think she says explicitly, and I'm sorry if I'm paraphrasing, I'm sorry if I'm misquoting, but like we could let, and I don't remember if this was maybe her social commentary or social media commentary on the piece, but it was like, do we want every like elite college to be MIT or Stanford, right? And her argument being like, no, you should have some standards that exclude Asians because then it'll be too, you know, too focused on particular disciplines or whatever. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, it's the conservative argument for kind of the liberal argument for affirmative action, which is like Harvard is like the recruiting ground for the elites, right? And so if we want to have a certain type of elite, we shouldn't just let in all the Asians who get, you know, 4.0 or 4.5 GPAs, right? And I mean, on the one hand, I guess I'm for private institutions deciding like what they want to be about.
Right.
And so if that means that like you don't want to be just like completely focused on academic excellence and like do want to have, you know, diverse student body to the degree that you adopt affirmative action policies or something like that. I'm like, if you're not accepting public money and you're not a public institution,
then it's none of my business.
That's none of my business. And that's what you want to do. Okay. I can imagine there's a non-bigoted reason why you might mm-hmm. want to do that. Right. I don't think that's, if I ran a college, I don't think that's how I would run it, but, I can understand why you do that. But, yeah, but, she's very committed to that idea. Yeah.
And look, I get Inez Stepman had a response to this that I appreciated, that I mostly agree with, saying, well, there is room for both. It's stereotypically Asian grind mindset where the tiger mom type thing where you just, you know, ruthlessly force on your kids this, you know, autonomy eliminating relentless pursuit of academic achievement in the narrowest sense that undervalues creativity. You're the kind of the idiosyncratic exploratory nature of the American cultural ethos, that we're a nation of outcasts and explorers and adventurers, the kind of rugged individualism that is different from a just relentless pursuit of the A+ or whatever.
Metric.
That I appreciate. I get that, but I think our future needs to be a blending of those two concepts.
Yeah, sure.
And to extent our human civilization is going to be a blending of that, of those mm-hmm. concepts of America, the greatest country on earth, and everything we've achieved through our entrepreneurial, capitalist, rugged individualist spirit, mixed with a Asian relentless pursuit of intelligence and technical achievement. And those two things together will hopefully make Earth a better place.
Yeah.
So it will be some of both, but like we want doctors who got good grades.
Yeah.
We want scientists who got good grades.
Yeah.
We want,
right.
We don't want them who, you know, who, and especially with the affirmative action stuff, then it became a way for elites who are just not smart to get in.
Yeah.
Because they started doing all sorts of things like, well, how much volunteer hours did you do?
Right.
You know, were you on the water polo team?
Right.
And the only people who can afford to do that and do all the academic discipline are rich people. So that's not benefiting anyone. That's just a backdoor in for the kids of celebrities, basically.
Right. It's just like shuffling around the elites just a little bit more, right?
Doing the test, just doing standardized tests is actually the Freddie DeBoer has a whole argument about this, is better
is
for
the
non-elites, even though it became this idea that, well, but they can't afford the test prep help. And that is true. If you're wealthier, you have some advantage on the test,
but you have way more of an advantage.
Every other criteria embeds more advantage.
It's like with the like diversity statements or whatever, or it's like if you, you know, grow up and speak the lingo of the diversity statements, you know, in the elite circles, then you can nail that part of it. But if you're coming from a less advantaged background where people don't talk like that, then it's discriminated against because of that standard.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I don't want the federal government or really any governments involved in higher education. And I wish college would matter, like colleges currently conceived would matter less, because I do agree you need all sorts of people. You need grinders who can like train themselves on, getting really good grades and acing the test and remembering, what bone the hip bone's connected to or whatever, right? And then you need people who, you know, are maybe a little more well-rounded, you know? And,
dreamers. Creative types.
Fuck ups, you know? Yeah. Whatever, right? Obviously, we need all different types of people. And we should have a higher education ecosystem that allows for a little more pluralism. This is why I find it hard to care too much about a lot of the college campus like wars. I mean, I do care to the extent that like a lot of this is.
That was a slap in the face.
No, I don't mean it like that. I know you're one of the good ones. Because a lot of this is downstream federal policy. So there is a reason that we all kind of have to care about it. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, sure, some liberal arts colleges can be training grounds for woke activists. Right. And some can focus on all you do is read Plato all day. It has to be a dead white man who wrote the book. Nothing else. Right.
Yeah.
Some can be, you know, hyper technical engineering colleges where only the best of the best of, you know, you got 3000 on your SAT or whatever. are admitted, and some can, you know, oh, we want, yeah, we want the more well-rounded student body of athletes and C students and whatever else, right? Like, let a thousand flowers bloom. I don't have to go down every, you know, restaurant on Connecticut Avenue and tell them exactly what type of food to serve, right? You know?
And we certainly don't have to have a government policy, in my view, that funnels money toward and funnels encouragement toward everyone to do whatever they can to get into the elite college, to make elite credentialism a more important part of American life.
But this is why...
That is policies I would fight against, the student loans being a major example, that the subsidizing of that has made the cost of college go out of whack and has created this just, you can't even get, you know, you can't be a barista at Starbucks unless you've jumped through, unless you've gotten your PhD, because we've set that up. We've delayed adulthood and jobbing and all that stuff.
And then once they get the PhD, you know, they're going to unionize. No, I mean, this is something for conservatives and liberals to fight about, because it's like, they want a gigantic state, right? And so that's why they need the, like, to argue about what happens at the elite colleges.
Right, and their state's like, all going to be one way.
Yeah, because
they're going to make everything must be banned or mandatory.
Yes, the elite must be trained to form society in the way that we want. Whereas, like, us libertarians, we're like, society's going to unfold. You know, if you leave it alone, it'll unfold in a generally beneficial way for everyone. So we don't have to worry too much about sculpting the minds of the next, you know, movers of the levers of power, right? And so I feel like that's just where I come down on a lot of these college issues. It's like, I don't want to have to give a shit about what happens at Harvard, right? It's not sour grapes. I didn't apply. They weren't good enough for me.
I went to the Harvard of the West, the University of Michigan. So it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, that's pretty good. No, I went to Harvard's rival school, Portland State University. So that's always
PSU.
My joke. Anytime someone says they went to Harvard or Yale, I'm like, oh, that was our rival school. It's my little joke.
I like the one-way rivals. Well, Michigan State considers Michigan to be its rival, but Michigan does not consider Michigan State to be its rival. We consider Ohio State to be our rival.
Right.
So
it's like the Mad Men elevator meme.
I don't think of you at all. Mad Men, it's continuing for us. We just watched in my household the season 2 finale last night. You're into season 3, I heard.
Yes. What's your favorite season of the show, if I can ask?
I don't know what my favorite season is. The third season is pretty great. It might be the third season. I love the third season finale is my favorite episode. Shut the door, have a seat.
Yeah.
That's my favorite episode of Mad Men. I like, you know, the second phase of the show a lot at the new... Mm-hmm. I don't like the fourth season. I think I like the fifth and sixth and third seasons or something like that.
Okay, interesting. I think the third season is my favorite as well.
It's really strong.
It's very good. You have the very interesting relationship between Dawn and Conrad Hilton, where, you know, every other relationship Dawn has, it's either like subordinates to boss around, or clients or women to charm, basically. Those are his like two modes, right? And then in this man, he finds someone who it's like he's submissive to him in a weird way.
Yeah.
And like kind of appreciates the fact that he's being bossed around by him. He's like, finally, I have like a great person to like try to meet their expectations, right? Mm-hmm. So I find that kind of an interesting arc for his character. I'm also just like, I love what a fucking mess he is. I just watched the episode where like he gets in a fight with Betty and so like takes off and is like drinking a glass of whiskey as he's driving down the road. And then he like picks up the hitchhikers who like,
who hit him over the head and steals
money. Yeah. And it's just like, it's so crazy that like he despises every one of his immediate professional and familial associates and children, but then somehow is like just able to go on benders with complete randos. That's why he's good at advertising, right? Is because he's like able to just like slip into someone else's shoes for a while.
Right. But we just did the stretch of episodes where he just totally disappears to California in the midst of like
very serious
his marriage crises. And then the business is being sold and he's just not there for all of the relevant behind the scenes conversations about the British people taking it over.
Right.
Then he tries to portray it to Pete as if I was giving you a chance to prove yourself.
Complete bullshit.
And Pete just eats it up because all he wants is Don's fatherly approval.
Right.
And then it's so perceptive in the season before when, you know, they're fighting all season.
Right.
And Pete tries to destroy him. And Bert Cooper, the old guy who is the ultimate source of all wisdom on the show, says, fire him if you want to. But you never know how loyalty is born. And in fact, that proves to be completely the case because Pete becomes the most loyal lapdog of Don for the duration of the show.
Yeah.
Like immediately tattles to Don about the Duck Phillips plan to oust him.
Yeah, that's a really good arc too, because he loses his father in one of the early episodes of season two, and so obviously he's...
And he goes right the first... He goes to Don's office. That's the first thing he does.
Right. Yeah, there's such a good... That's when in that very scene where... Bert Cooper is advising him not to fire him. One of the reasons they can't is because his mother is well-connected or whatever. But he has that great line where he's like, New York is a system of levers and gears and buttons or whatever he says. And just like, so cool.
It's such a great speech.
Yeah.
But they dropped it all in the Depression. Some people have no faith in this country.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
it's just great. I just watched the season two finale. So Don defeats Duck by giving his little speech about how advertising is it's about selling products, and we'll do that with creative, not with and Duck flips out, and the British people just drop him immediately.
Yeah,
and the whole episode with the backdrop of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about. Where it's
great.
Events like theme in the episode connected to lightly connected to event happening in the wider world,
and really the to me the most relevant to that conflict in the thing is Betty and Don. It's not clear if they will reconcile. They've been estranged,
or they'll actually go to war. Yeah.
Right, these two opposed forces, will they, who's going to blink, who's going to, are they going to get out of this situation without going to war? And they do. They back down for the time being.
Very good.
Just like us and the Soviets.
Whew, close
good
one.
Stuff.
Yeah. Thank God we don't have to worry about that anymore. what do you think of Duck Phillips as a character? Who recurs in seasons?
He's great. Loathsome.
I
find him despicable. I hate him.
I never...
The dog thing.
I mean, that
the dog
is, that
is unforgivable.
Yeah, he was under a lot of distress at the time, I guess.
But... He loses them. Don's right. He loses them the airline they have.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's just bad. You think he's bad at, his job.
I mean, he's a great character, but...
Yeah, I always felt a little bit of sympathy with him, but... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the dog thing, I get. I mean, that's like a trope in movies, right? Is the kick the dog, pet the dog, right? If you want to establish that, like, ultimately this character, regardless of anything else they do, is bad, you have them do something mean to a dog. If you want to establish that this character ultimately has something kind of redeemable about them, you have them pet the dog, right?
Yeah.
So,
Other movie, TV, entertainment stuff I wanted to mention. Did you see the controversy over the Odyssey casting this week?
Yes. Well, there was some conniptions online about the potential
Lupita
that they were
going to
hire a black woman to play Helen of Troy.
Right. She's in the movie. It's not confirmed what role she's playing.
Okay.
So already that's pretty...
Yeah.
It's pretty premature freak out here.
Yeah.
But the idea, Elon Musk was really upset about this.
Oh, great. Yeah.
She's going to play Helen of Troy. Beautiful woman. Beautiful actress. Great actress. I've liked her in a lot of things. Black woman.
Yeah.
To portray Helen of Troy. And, okay, yeah. Helen of Troy is, I guess, a classic beauty, obviously, from mythology.
Yeah.
Who maybe your first thought wouldn't necessarily be it's a black woman, but
Angelina Jolie or something like that.
Right, you know? She's played by Diane Kruger in the Troy movie, which I actually quite liked that movie.
Get January Jones to play fucking Helen of Troy.
Yeah,
right?
There we go. Yeah. We could cast a Helen of Troy, but she doesn't need to be it's Mediterranean. They're like, well, this is a black woman. She's not Greek. Well, like Matt Damon isn't Greek either. He's playing Odysseus.
Nonsense, right?
So.
Like, modern races don't map onto antiquity.
No.
And then also, like, in the Mediterranean world, like, they're all, it's a cosmopolitan
right. People
mix
understand.
Of everyone.
In the Mediterranean, everyone looks, you know, tan.
Right, yeah.
Not
yeah.
dark skin, right?
Yeah.
It's there's no, Sicily, North Egypt, that part of the Middle East, it's all people who look not, like, classically white and not black and... You can find people of that ethnicity or not. It doesn't really matter.
No.
She's born out of an egg because Zeus fucks a swan. So it seems a little unreal to expect that it necessarily has to be like a very light. I mean, Diane Kruger was great. She's German or Germanic or something. She's not Greek either.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's beautiful.
So,
she's
like,
great.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So it's ridiculous.
So,
to be
so
like,
what they're really just saying is,
I don't
want
to say
they want a hot
movie.
White woman.
Yeah, which I mean, I guess just
fine.
Be
just say
transparent
that.
About it. Yeah, I mean,
one's not supposed to talk about one's like racial hangups and who they're attracted
preferences,
to. You're just not. just nobody.
So, I mean, I guess, okay, so let's dig in here a little bit. even though that is like one of the last refuges of like, you can have explicit racial preferences, right?
I think there was a controversy on Grindr about this for whether you, gay dating. Dating app, whether you could set a like preference for like no Asians, blacks, no, I don't know.
Wow. Yeah.
I think, I guess, so. Would that I be, don't know.
I guess that wouldn't be illegal, right? Yeah. Cause it's not like dating apps aren't, if it were like housing ads, I guess, but
I think it's interesting.
Yeah. No, cause it would have to be some sort of explicit civil rights protection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But
you're right to have sex. I mean, some of these incel people think that's the next frontier, right?
Yeah, here we go. So it's obvious people try to like ground this in like historic realism, which is completely stupid. As you mentioned, it's the child of a swan and a god,
right?
And so like, what race is that going to be? Should we have swan? Should we hire a swan to do it?
Yeah.
Swan representation. Yeah. And then also it's a story about fucking myths. And so it's not real historical events. Right. So all of that is stupid.
Right.
But why do people get angsty about like, I mean, I'm not saying this is the case in this scenario, like, but there is something where it's like gratuitous diversity casting, right?
Sure. Sure.
Why do people get upset about that, right? I think it's just because, I mean, why do you cast someone to play a role? It's because like they meet the audience's expectations of what this role is supposed to be, right? And if people expect Helen of Troy to be a beautiful white woman, then I don't think it's crazy to be like, you should, cast a beautiful white woman. And if you don't, then the audience is going to have some, it's going to mess with their suspension of disbelief or something like that. Like,
I don't want to, obviously I reject a kind of Kathleen Kennedy Star Wars, like it must be a strong, lesbian, black person for every role of comedy that is then one dimensional,
right?
Because because the point is explicitly to do some kind of social engineering, is that character then cannot fail,
right?
And must be perfect at all times,
right?
And must be the kind of Mary Sue,
right?
Archetype that they must bring in some a female character who's better at everything than the male characters, and has no conflict,
right? Yeah,
but then that argument then gets made too broadly. People say that about every female character.
How do you walk the line between just like racism and then also like here's my expectations, like reasonable expectations of like what I would have expect this casting to look like.
The other casting controversy this week was for that Wuthering Heights movie, because it's Jacob Elordi is Heathcliff, Heathcliff. Wuthering Heights is one of my absolute favorite books. Heathcliff is described in the book as dark-skinned, but that's in a Victorian England sense, where that could mean black or Indian. Mm-hmm. That could also mean Spanish.
Yeah.
That could mean really anything.
Yeah.
And Heathcliff, I guess I wouldn't say, it's not that his race is not important, because he's definitely like, he's an other, but it's not specifically because of, it's not racism exact. His background is mysterious. He was just found on the street. He is of no parentage. He's not a member of the elite. So he is, and also he is like a demonic force. So there is something, he is outside this society, but it's not really, and he maybe has a complicated racial background, but it's not explicit. It's not about his race.
But that, I mean, in a way, that's like, that's how you could use the term neutrally, not pejoratively, but that's how like diversity casting could flesh out a theme and be used productively. It's like, this guy is already supposed to be an outsider. Let's just lean into that by casting a black man to play someone.
If there was an Indian actor playing him, that'd be totally fine. If a black actor playing him, it'd be totally fine. But also, it's fine that it's Jacob Elordi, who's is of Spanish descent. He's very white-looking.
Oh, the objection is they hired a white person.
Yes, this is liberals being mad. It's a white person. Sorry, they're like, it should be a black person.
Yeah. Okay,
and like, that's ridiculous, too.
Yeah. With so much of this stuff, like, there's no just, like, rational principle to, like, oh, here's the rule. Here's how the casting should look. Here's what's okay to be upset about. Here's what's not. So, like, let me give two examples, maybe. So you watched the Rings of Power show, right? I really liked the first season. I got completely bored with the second one. There was a bunch of controversy about how there was like black hobbits, or like that was a lot of diversity casting.
Yes,
to a degree, that was like a little gratuitous.
Somewhat agreed. Yeah, well, I the criticism of that one I found, because this happened at the same time as House of the Dragon, which also did some diversity because the Game of Thrones
made
was
one of the
very white, Targaryen, so they made a Targaryen off branch, the Velaryon family, black people.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fine and great.
Yeah,
and I thought the Lord of the Rings one was a little less defensible. But
yeah, because it's like it's Tolkien's world, right? Which is like each of the races is like based on, you know, European peoples. Like there is a much clearer analogy there. And so what you would expect. So like that was a little more jarring, right? Like I still like the first season. Like it wasn't like I was freaking out online about it, but like it was jarring and it was like I would have made different decisions here.
Well, what I liked about it in House of the Dragon is that it served a legitimate plot function.
Because
the parentage of Rhaenyra, the main character, of her children is in dispute because she clearly did have a relationship with like her head of the guard, and but she's in an arranged marriage with someone who is of this House Velaryon. So why don't, and in the source material, it's always like her kids don't have the Velaryon look. They have this House Strong look.
Curious.
So the fact that you just like additionally demonstrated that on screen by having this family be dark skinned, I thought that was good. To me, that was doing the work of the plot.
Right.
So that it had some additional reason for it that I had no problem with.
Yeah, it worked. It worked. Yeah. It would make sense that you have like, you know, they're like old world, families united taking over this new continent. Like it would make sense that you have racial diversity there,
right? Absolutely. Yeah, they have an Africa type continent, Sotheros, that's like underexplored, that is very near the Valyria, where these families had come from, the dragon riding family. So it is perfectly explicable within the world as presented.
Sure, and it makes the world maybe a richer place. No, I was gonna contrast it with you've watched the Green Knight.
I did see some of that movie. Weirdly enough, I just ended up watching like a bunch of clips of it on YouTube. I don't know. I should have just watched it all the way through. I loved it. I thought it was great.
It's a really good movie.
I loved it. I love that actor.
Yeah. What's his name? Patel. That, I mean, that's why I bring it up. But
He is someone who I think could play Heathcliff perfectly in this kind of casting. I think that guy's great. I loved that movie. Yeah. I loved how it ends. I love the story of the Green
Knight. Dev Patel,
Dev Patel. That's a great movie.
It's great.
I love the story
legend.
of the Green Knight. It has a positive ending. I think that's how, it's a little open to interpretation, interpret it as he's learned his lesson.
And it ends on a joke, right?
Yeah.
So you don't think he gets, spoilers, but you don't think he gets killed at the end?
No, I think it's a little lesson for him to go off and be the best king he can be now.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I interpret it positively.
Back to racism. that got some, like, in some corners of the internet, that got some right-wing guff because he's an Indian man hired to, you know, cast to play an Arthurian knight.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? He does a great job.
Right, and it doesn't feel like it's supposed to be so accurate. Like,
right, yeah.
It's the same...
It's magical realism.
Or with, like, Death of Stalin, and they have British people playing and doing British
that's
accents
part of the joke, right?
To be communist commissars, and that's fine. It works for what they're doing.
Yeah.
They have the same with that. They have the Catherine the Great show, which I quite liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has black people in it, and but she has a British accent, and it's deliberately ahistorical.
That's part of the fun.
Yeah.
So I would summarize it all this way. You don't have to be religiously committed to diversity casting. It's okay to be like, find some that some of the casting strange or maybe miscast.
Yeah.
But if that's like the thing you're really getting upset about, take a breath and worry about something else.
Don't go see the movie.
If it's really that big of a deal to you. There's many of other things you can watch.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts. So
I don't know what else we got on here. We kind of went through all the Billie Eilish.
Yeah. So I completely missed.
You didn't watch the Grammys?
I watched a little bit in a bar where they did the like Ozzy Osbourne tribute and Post Malone saying Warped.
Well, you saw more of it than I did then. And in fact, you've seen more of it. I don't think I've ever in my life watched a single second of the Grammys.
No, I don't. I love music. I listen to music a lot, but it's just normally.
Not a music guy.
Yeah. Like, what do you listen to, like anime soundtracks or something?
Right? Yeah, video game soundtracks. I put them on while I've been working on this book I'm doing. I have on repeat. My better half is getting so annoyed with it because I've literally been just listening to this on repeat for 4 months now. is the soundtrack to Final Fantasy X.
Oh.
it's a great soundtrack. 9, 7, 9, and 10. I love those games, and I love their soundtracks.
Well, I can sympathize because I listen to a lot of doom metal where it's like hour long songs of you know, one or two riffs. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you there. But for this, for similar reasons, I don't consume a lot of Grammy stuff or care that much about like
pop culture, mass, whatever slop the masses are eating up.
It does make me because they had the Ozzy Osbourne tribute. It does make me a little wistful for a time when like the music I liked was also like the pop music. Mm. Although the Grammy, the tribute they did, they sang War Pigs. Yeah, it did piss me off a little bit. Post Malone, he did a good job. And he collaborated with Ozzy before, but it just kind of pissed me off where it's like Black Sabbath birthed like metal and hard rock and stoner rock and all this kind of like more niche genres that I really enjoy. But like, who do they get to be the guitarist, like fucking Slash, and they get the drummer from the Chili Peppers or whatever? Like, wouldn't you want to like your actual genetic lineage? Why don't you bring some of those guys on stage, you know? So I thought that was a little cheap.
I see.
But catch me up on the Billie Eilish controversy.
Oh, she said, no one is illegal on stolen land. You know, they were all of them complaining about ICE.
Yeah.
I'm with Ricky Gervais when he said it, I think it was the Emmys or something. It was the greatest hosting speech ever where he said, just come up here, accept your award. Don't start talking. No one cares what you have to say. Yeah. Most of you have spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. It's a great speech. And I wish they would all say it. But obviously they can use their time to spell
sure, say whatever they want. Yeah.
But no one is illegal on stolen
land. It's stupid.
It's a little incoherent.
Yeah, because it's like, all property rights have to be immediately.
Hunger Games. Anyone can be killed at any time.
Right. Also, the Mexicans stole the land. Right? Yeah, like the people coming from. Depending on their particular lineage, right? Like,
well, these stolen land people are people who can make that complaint. What they think there was this. I think they're just
idiots.
They don't understand history.
I don't want to judge Billie Eilish too harshly. I mean, she's like, what, like 22, 24?
Actually, I like some of her music. It's
fine. Yeah, what was the one that they used for the...
For Bond?
No,
like
not
the
for
song.
Bond.
I like the song she did for the James Bond movie.
I really like the one they used for the theme music for the fourth season of True Detective, which was not a good season, but does have a really good theme song. Bury a Friend. Yeah, really good song.
But these people think that history
started when the whites showed up and started genociding
and took the
everyone.
Land. But like the people there took the land from someone else.
Yeah,
and
constant bloodshed and war. Right.
The history of human civilization is they take it from you and you take it from them. And you want to set it here and say everything before that. Okay, no, you know. This is when the Israel-Palestine people start. I get so annoyed with it. They took it from them, but then they took it from them.
Before
and they
that,
did this to
it was
them.
Ottoman. Yeah,
and they,
yeah.
Both sides want to say, well, here, then you started doing these injustices to us. And the other side will say, but right before that, you did this injustice to us.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to...
Yeah, so all land has been stolen at one point
or
another, right? I always get into arguments with the Georgists online about this because they, you know, like their whole idea is like in order to, like you've taken this private property that used to belong to everyone, and so you have to pay everyone else to basically rent it from the wider collective. And it's just like, and they're like, oh, so where did you get the proper right to that property? And it's like, you know what? No one did.
Right.
It was stolen.
It's mine.
It's privatized. And it's a better world if we just like draw the line and say, you know what? This is the distribution of property rights. Let's just let free markets and trading happen from here, and everyone will be in a better place, right?
Yeah.
Instead of this relentless, let's go back and because you couldn't even do it, right? Because like who do we steal the land from? The Sioux who stole it from the Shoshone or whoever else, right? The Aztecs who stole it from the Mayans. And I know those are different areas.
Right.
It's like it's all bloodshed and genocide going back for forever.
Right.
Like the land has been stolen multiple times. There's no one to give it back to.
Right. And no one can return land from which they are supposedly from because we're all composites of different groups of people.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Where would we go back to?
Yeah. Who do you pay the reparations to? I guess like someone who's like half black, you know, has a white parent and a black parent, like would they?
You gotta split your time.
Yeah. It's a wash because you pay reparations from one side to the
sense.
Other, right? Yeah, doesn't make any sense. Yeah,
we gotta move on.
Silly. I don't want to musicians can have really stupid opinions. That's okay.
Everybody can have stupid opinions.
If,
I don't care.
If I cared about, you know, musicians' opinions on stolen land or white supremacy or anything like that, I wouldn't. It'd be a lot fewer metal bands I could listen to. Let me say that. Right?
Are metal bands really right wing?
So if you get into black metal, there's a lot of those guys are just like Nazi white supremacists. Ooh. Like pagan, you know, they burn a bunch of churches in Norway or whatever. Like a lot of it was like, I mean, I don't think there's like a deep ideology to it, but like black metal is like we're gonna try to be as
edgy
like,
as possible, and that's
yeah, as nihilistic and rejecting of both musical convention and Christian society. I so see. They, yeah, they're Nazis and Stalinists and Satanists and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but it's a lot of good music too. So
a lot
it's
of
like,
good music.
Yeah, it's not. I don't understand. I don't understand the lyrics, and so I can't be held accountable for listening to them. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, let's leave it there.
It doesn't sound good, but no.
Okay. Sounds good to you, not to me. Yep. Thanks for watching Freed Up. We'll see you next week.